It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike acts as host at an information please party. And here's the game we play. You furnish the questions and our experts try to answer them. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, like all good parties, the one we run is entirely spontaneous and go as you please. And those who will provide the fun this evening are first our three questioneers, the versatile composer and pianist Oscar Levant, the sports expert and author of The American Sporting Scene, John Kieran, and the conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams. Then we have something of a novelty, because our guest tonight is really two guests. That is to say, we have with us the well-known Washington correspondents, Drew Pearson and Robert Allen, authors of the book Washington Merry-Go-Round, which is also the name of their famous Washington News column. They think as one, they write as one, and so they'll answer as one. They have their own separate little desk and separate little microphone. All right, we'll start with a question from J.H. Cords of Atlanta, Georgia. I'm going to quote a line from a once popular song. It's probably still popular with Mr. Adams. And if you give me the line which rhymes with it, you will name the song. That's ingenious, eh? Now, they have to get three out of four on this. Here's the first. List to the story, I'll tell it all. The line which rhymes with it should give us the title, Mr. Adams.
After the ball.
And what's the whole line?
This to the story, I'll tell you.
I never would have asked if I'd known that was going to happen.
My heart was broken after the ball.
Might be that, or it might be I believed her faithless after the ball. Probably
that's
either
that's
one.
Another stanza. That's
all right, another stanza. The title is After the Ball. I'm going to marry him soon. Now, if you give me the line which rhymes with that, you'll give me the title of the song.
Well,
I'm going to marry
song
him
called
soon.
Soon.
That isn't this one, Mr. Levant.
Joan Moon.
Mr. Adams?
My love is the man in the moon.
Yes, sweetheart, it's okay on the air. My sweetheart's the man in the moon. You can say that. Very good. I'm going to marry him soon. My sweetheart's the man in the moon. This is how the story ends. Mr. Levant.
He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends?
Right. And what's the title of the song?
Can't we be... I can't get the last word.
friends. And who wrote it, Mr.
Levant? Kay Swift and James Warburg, who also writes political books.
That right?
Certainly.
Right. All right, all right.
He used a pseudonym. They wrote a show together called Fine and Dandy. This song appeared in the first little show, in which Body and Soul also appeared.
Very good. How about this one? The North Pole I have charted. Mr. Levant.
I can't get started with you.
That's right. Very good. Four out of four. Mr. Adams and Mr. Levant coming through nobly. Now, how about this one from Carl J. Eggerman of Lake Como, New Jersey? Identify the nicknamed gentleman in this football melee. Now, I think you're going to find five nicknames, and you can make one error out of the five. Henny Penny threw a forward pass to Nervous Nelly, which was intercepted by Egg Charlie, but the play was called back because Cotton Ed was seen clipping the man. Now, in that football mix-up, there are five nicknames. Who
Sounds
are
like
any of
them? Senator the bait.
Which one, Mr. Allen?
Cotton Ed is the senator from South Carolina.
Yes, Cotton Ed. What's his last name?
Cotton Ed Smith.
Yes. Cotton
and
Ed
then
Smith.
There's another one there. Do you mind? Can you read that over again?
Oh, sure. Henny Penny threw a forward pass to Nervous Nelly, which was intercepted by Egg Charlie. Mr. Allen?
Nervous Nelly was
Frank B. Kellogg.
Frank B.
There
Kellogg.
There they go. One, two is one. Thank you, Mr.
Former
Pierce.
Secretary of State.
And then the other one.
Why was Nervous Nelly Kellogg so called?
Egg Charlie was the late Vice President of the United States, Charlie Curtis.
Yes, why was he so called, Mr. Allen?
Well, that's a long story. It's got something to do with frozen eggs.
All right, suppose we let it go.
You find it all
that.
In the first edition of the Washington Merry-Go-Round.
Mr. Levant?
Henny Penny is Henny Penny Morgenthau.
Yes, so called on account of his functions as Secretary of the Treasury, I suppose. That gives us only one to go. The last one is the man was seen clipping the man. Who's called the man? Mr. Pearson.
Senator Bilbo of Mississippi.
Senator Bilbo of Mississippi. Why is he so called? Any particular reason, Mr. Pearson?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think he calls himself that
he does?
Title.
He wants to make sure of his sex.
Manly virility.
I don't get it. It seems a kind of vague phrase for a man to use about himself.
That man in the White House. Well, he's the man down in Mississippi.
That's to disassociate himself from that man in the White House. Well, that gives us 5 out of 5 nicknames.
You're good.
How about this one from Jesse Parsons of Hartford, Connecticut? Get 2 out of 3 if you can. I'm going to give you 3 slightly misquoted lines. Give me the lines as they should be quoted. Here's the first. My hair is white, but not from fright. Mr. Kieran.
My hair is white, but not with years. Nor grew it white in a single night, as men's have grown from fears or something like
You've
that.
You've got everything right except one word in that, Mr. Kieran.
My hair is gray, is it?
Yes, that's right. I think I'll accept the amendation. My hair is gray, but not with years, nor grew it
Prisoner
white in a single
Shallan.
Night. By whom?
Byron.
By Byron. Very good, Mr. Kieran. Now, that's a difficult job. Now, here's another one. Westward, the course of empire makes its way. Westward, the course of empire makes its way. Mr. Adams.
It's westward, the star of empire makes its way.
Mr. Kieran.
Westward, the course of empire takes its way is correct.
Yeah, that's right. What's the matter with you, Mr. Adams?
The star of empire was a misquotation by John Adams, which has since been perpetuated, so to speak. It was originally written, of course, by Bishop Berkeley.
Now, don't talk to me, Mr. Kieran. Talk to Mr.
John
Adams.
John Adams was right.
Colossus of debate.
Yeah, that was the Adams that was right. Westward, the course of empire takes its way. And as Mr. Kieran has told us so accurately, it's been frequently misquoted, most recently by our own FPA. How about this one? Heaven's all about us as far as I can see. Mr. Kieran.
Oh, is that a misquotation for Heaven Lies About Us in Our Infancy?
That's a distortion.
By Pope on intimations of immortality.
Not Pope, I think, though.
No.
James Russell Lowell.
Wordsworth on intimations of immortality from recollections of earliest childhood.
Yeah. What was that you said, Mr. Adams?
I said Lowell, and thank heaven you didn't call on me.
Well, he knows a lot about all authors except Bishop Barclay and Lowell, Mr. Adams does. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one from W.H. Hoskins of New Rochelle, New York? Get 3 out of 4. Mr. Allen and Mr. Pearson are a sort of brother team, and so it's only reasonable that we should have a question about other famous brother teams, except these are real brothers. Give the first names of these famous brother teams, the Smith Brothers. Smith Brothers, Mr. Adams?
Well, it's supposed to be trade and mark.
Yes, and that's all I know about. Do you suppose they ever had real first names?
Oh, yes.
They did?
Yes, everybody in Poughkeepsie knows that.
But do you know?
No.
No, well, we'll hear from Poughkeepsie in the morning.
Would they have any relation to Frankie and Johnny?
Frankie and Johnny Smith? Well, I don't think they were brothers. Frankie and Johnny were not related in that way.
He's got Bill Bob.
How about the James Brothers? Mr. Levant.
Jesse and Frank, according to 20th Century Fox.
Jesse and Frank, yes. There are another set of James brothers.
Challenges.
Any ideas?
Henry, James, and the other man who was an expatriate.
Yes, Henry was the expatriate.
Yeah.
William stayed at home. Henry James and William James, the novelist and psychologist. The Gracchi were brothers. What were their first names? The Gracchi.
Romulus.
They were Allen? Cornelia's little boys.
Cornelia's little boys, yes, but they had names. And Romulus was not one of them, I don't think.
That leaves Remus out, too.
That leaves Uncle Remus out.
Tiberius.
I beg pardon?
Tiberius.
That's right, Mr. Adams.
Scratch me, Gracchi.
Wasn't that one of them? Was one of them Tiberius?
Tiberius is right for one of them. What was the other, Mr. Kieran?
I don't know. Valerius?
No, you're guessing.
I certainly did.
Isn't Gracchi the elder?
Caius. Tiberius and Caius. If you'd gotten Caius, Mr. Adams, it would have been marvelous. But didn't get it. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about the Cunningham brothers? Cunningham. Mr. Levant.
They're both in the Mediterranean now, one on land and one on sea. One's name is Alan.
Right.
And the other is his brother.
Correct. Mr. Pearson, help
brother
us out.
Andrew.
Andrew, yes. Andrew. And which is the admiral and which is the general? Mr. Pearson?
I think that Andrew is the admiral.
Andrew is the admiral. And, Mr. Pearson, which is Alan?
He is the general.
Good work. That's quick thinking. Now the...
You're good.
He is good, isn't
he,
Mr. Allen?
I wish he was that good in Washington.
Why don't you raise each other? I have here a letter, or rather a part of a letter, from Senator Claude Pepper.
Mr. Allen?
Any objection?
He has?
As well, who has not?
Mr. Pepper, Senator Pepper
words
writes...
were never spoke.
Senator Pepper writes, it seems to me that many members of Congress and the Cabinet, some of whom may have suffered embarrassment at the hands of Messrs. Pearson and Allen, would be delighted to have you ask them some questions regarding Washington.
Who'd we miss?
I have a number of other letters of a similar tenor from Senators Guffey and Senator Lister Hill. I can't use all of them, but I'm going to use the one from Claude Pepper. Apparently you enjoy considerable deserved popularity, Mr. Allen and Mr. Pearson, down among the senators and congressmen. Here's one from Mr. Pepper. What total sum of money do you get when you add that annual salaries paid by the federal government to these people? Now, you have to do a little mental arithmetic. Just add up the total salaries paid to these people. 9 Supreme Court justices. Got it? You have to give me the final sum, Mr. Pearson, Mr. Allen. Just keep it to yourself for a minute. 9 Supreme Court justices. Okay? Now, you boys can whisper to each other. Mr. Levant, don't listen.
That's like being deaf.
Mr. William Knudsen. Mr. William Knudsen.
Yes, go ahead.
You got that, Mr. Levant? Mr. Cordell Hull.
How about
that? Secretary of State. Now, you add the total salaries paid out to those 11 gentlemen, and you get the sum of what? Now, the first hand I get is Mr. Pearson's, and his has to be the answer I receive.
$197,501.
How'd you get that? That's wrong, but it's very interesting. how'd you get it? $197,501. All right.
I beg your pardon. I was 2,000 too high.
What's your final answer then?
Oh,
it makes it 195.
$195,501.
I'll accept that as your final answer and call that wrong too. Now you tell me how you got that. Go ahead, Mr. Pearson.
Well, the Supreme Court justices get $20,000 apiece, except for the Chief Justice, who gets $500 extra.
That's exactly right.
That would be $180,500.
That's correct. And very good.
Mr. Hull gets $15,000, and Mr. Knudsen gets $1.
Now, you're overpaying Mr. Knudsen.
Well, that's the thing.
That's the catch. Mr. Knudsen is a WOC man, which means without compensation. Mr. Knudsen is giving his distinguished services entirely free of charge to the government. He doesn't get even a dollar. Did you know that, Mr. Pearson?
Is that all off he was, a dollar?
He was only off a dollar, yeah.
Yeah, we'll buy it.
We call him a dollar a year, man.
Yes, but it isn't true.
Well, we can reduce our taxes by a dollar.
Mr. Knudsen gets no compensation whatsoever.
Well, you aren't going to argue about a buck, are you?
Oh, yes, we are. Not only are we going to argue about a buck, we're going to send 25 of them to Senator Claude Pepper. Plus, say, did they ever use these things down in Washington instead of the Encyclopedia Britannica? By the way, Mr. Pearson and Mr. Allen, what is a... These dollar-a-year men, when do they get paid, and how do they get paid?
Well, they get paid at the end of the year, at the end of the fiscal year.
End of the what year?
Fiscal year.
End of the fiscal year.
That's June 31st.
Mr. Nelson Rockefeller complained to me the other day that he hadn't received his dollar. He's worked for more than a year.
Mr. Rockefeller complained, did he?
He complained.
And do they get it in the form of a check?
They get it in the form of a check.
Of a check, a regular check.
Regular check. Uh-huh. And the last payday, there was none of them that collected a full dollar.
Why was that?
Well, they hadn't served a full year, and at that, some of them were very heavily overpaid.
They're shaving things pretty close down in Washington, apparently. How about this one now from Andrew Kinney of Washington, D.C.? What official or titled person... would be heralded by each of these trumpet fanfares. Now, these are people of the theater or opera or stage. You're going to hear some trumpets played, and they should announce to you the entrance of some particular character. Let's have the first and get 2 out of 3. Hans, Mr. Levant.
Is that Lohengrin?
That's Lohengrin. Very good.
Sounds like Taps.
Well, what were you going to say, Taps? No, it's Lohengrin. Mr. Levant?
I think that's when Elsa's on the spot. They think she knocked off her brother.
Well, I was right. I said it sounded like Taps.
And she wants a champion. So a few trumpet calls and the high-priced tenor Lohengrin comes on.
You do have the nicest way of bringing opera down to earth, which is where it belongs.
I'm trying to discourage opera.
Too late. Now the second trumpet call. That announces the entrance of whom, gentlemen?
Custer in an old silent picture.
It seems reasonable.
Boots and saddles.
Boots and saddles. Any ideas, gentlemen? Well, it's the Lord Chancellor and Iolanthe. Remember that now, Mr. Adams? Does it come back to you?
No, it does not. Not with that.
One wrong. Have to get the next one right.
That's Of Thee I Sing.
Of Thee I Sing. And who comes in?
Well, they have a lot of Supreme Court judges.
Yes, the judges in Of Thee I Sing. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Thank you very much. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now here's Mr. Cross with a definition of impartial.
Well, my dictionary says free from bias, fair. And that accurately describes the independent tobacco experts, buyers, auctioneers, and warehouse men. They're impartial and expert observers of the competition for milder, better-tasting tobacco. So their overwhelming preference for one cigarette, Lucky's, means a lot. Here's an example of what these experts see at auctions all over the South. So far this season, according to latest reports, at Durham, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company has paid 22% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 22% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. So you see, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And that's why, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated that the tobacco expert cigarette is definitely worth trying?
Mr. Cross, you've given us actual facts and figures, and in just 60 seconds. How about this one from H.B. Joseph of Brooklyn, New York? Oh, this is a pretty easy one, I think. Give me 3 well-known quotations that mention as many different colleges. I won't accept any place names.
What do you mean? I don't...
Colleges, you know what a college is.
Not clear about it.
Well, it's a thing which it wouldn't do you any good if you went through it. Any college except a place name. That is, I won't accept... NYU, or anything like that. Give me a quotation.
Like Bula Bula, that kind of thing?
No, a quotation which has the actual name of the college. Oh. For example, I'll give you one from Kipling, Mr. Kieran. Throw your favorite author back at you. For the temple bells are calling, and it's there that I would be. Get it?
Oh.
Temple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll give you, gentlemen, exactly 45 minutes to dope this out. Mr. Levant?
If I had the wings of an angel.
What college?
Well... over these prison walls, I'd fly. Something like that.
No, but what college? You have to name the actual college in the line, you say? Mr. Adams.
Up from the South at break of day.
What college?
College of the South.
That's right.
That's the name of
the
college.
Is that right, Kieran?
It's the one that has one of the most beautiful campi in this country.
Well, that's very good, Mr. Adams, but it is a place. Right. It's a place name, really. You see? It's a place name.
Well, the one I said about college was Penn. Over the walls.
I know, but you didn't mention the word pen, Mr. Kieran.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah, the pen is mightier than the sword. Very good. Shall I accept that as from Mr. Levant?
Yes.
I have one.
Mr. Levant.
California, here I come.
It's a place name.
Oh, I'm not clear on it yet.
Mr. Adams.
Oh, Columbia, the gem of the ocean.
Very good, yes. You're in fine form tonight, Mr. Kieran. Any others? That gives us 2 or 3. How about one more? How about one...
America, the gem of the ocean.
What college is that?
American University.
Yes, that's right. That would be okay. How about one from the deserted village, Sweet Auburn, loveliest village of the plain? Auburn, a college?
It's Alabama Poly.
Pardon?
Alabama Polytechnic Institute.
What's
Auburn.
The line?
At Auburn. That's why they call it Auburn. The name of the college is... The name of the institution is not Auburn.
I beg your pardon. How about one with the college hunter in it? That should be easy.
Lonely Mr. Adams?
The horn of the hunter is heard on the hill.
Very good. Yes. Well, that gives us 3. Mr. Kieran, did you think of another one there in between? There are a number of others. Bury the Great Duke would be one from Tennyson's Ode on Wellington, and so we might go on. How about this one from R.E. Eckhart of Troy, New York? Can you give me 4 presidents since the Civil War who were also defeated as presidential candidates? Mr. Levant.
Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland is right. He was defeated in 88. Mr. Allen.
Herbert Hoover?
Herbert Hoover, yes. Defeated in 32, elected in 28. Mr. Pearson.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Teddy Roosevelt, yes. Defeated in what year?
1912.
Well, that gives us 3. One more.
Grant was almost. He wasn't nominated the third time.
No, Grant would not be correct. Mr. Allen.
William Haar Taft.
Very good. Yes, defeated in 1912 also. And there's one more that I think we occasionally forget. Harrison, who was elected in 88 and defeated in 92.
They occasionally forget that.
We do. how about this one from Mrs. Russell Moore of Philadelphia? Get 3 out of 4. Now, I have here 4 characters of literature who were guilty of an offense punishable by the federal government. Name the federal agency that would be most concerned in bringing each to justice. In other words, you have to know what each was guilty of and what department would handle his particular case. Now, the first character is Martin Vanderhoff. Martin Vanderhoff. Does the name mean anything to any of you gentlemen? Not a ripple, not a sign of consciousness. Mr. Allen.
You mean a burr?
I beg your pardon?
Burr? Martin?
No, no, this is a fictional character.
Oh. We only deal with facts.
I wonder. And what do you do with a man?
Edward Everett Hale?
I beg pardon?
By Edward Everett Hale?
No, Martin Vanderhoff is a character and you can't take it with you. Remember that now, Mr. Kieran?
Is he a counterfeiter?
No, no. He's the old gentleman who evaded his taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And
was
evasion
he a senator?
Of taxes... Pardon?
Was he a senator?
No, he was... You must try to get your mind off your field, Mr. Allen. These people are imaginary characters.
He thinks the only crooks are in Washington.
You stay here and you'll enlarge your field of vision. Martin Vanderhoff, in You Can't Take It With You, was a tax evader, and his case would be handled by what bureau, Mr. Pearson?
Bureau of Internal Revenue.
Yes, that's correct. That gives us one wrong, however. Now, how about Jay Gatsby, a fictional character in a novel by whom?
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Correct, Mr. Adams. Yes. Jay Gatsby was guilty of what offense?
Was it murder?
No, it was not. It was rum running. Mm-hmm. Rum running. And what department would handle his case, gentlemen, rum running? If Mr. Allen or Mr. Pearson?
The Treasury.
Yes, the Department of the Treasury. Again, the Department of Internal Revenue connected with the Treasury Department. That gives us 2 wrong. We seem to be able to get the department, but not the offense. How about Silas Marner? We all read about Silas Marner as children, Mr. Kieran.
Well, he hoarded gold.
That's right.
The Treasury Department would get after him.
No, well, not the Treasury. What gold hoarding is an offense punishable by what department?
The Department of Justice.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Adams. The Department of Justice or the Federal Reserve Board. Mr. Pearson, what were you going to tell us?
I was going to say the Department of Justice, FBI.
Yes, that's correct. Now, how about Achilles? Famous Greek hero Achilles. Of what offense was he guilty, Mr. Kieran?
Well, nowadays, you'd call it dodging the draft board.
How? How do you explain
that?
He
refused to go out and fight.
That's right.
He sulked in his tent.
Very good, yes. And who would handle his case?
Warner Brothers.
Mr. Allen?
The federal district attorney, it would be the Justice Department, the branch of the Justice Department.
Well, that wouldn't be the same as the director of selective service, would it?
Hershey.
No.
Well, he'd have to turn him over to...
He'd have to turn him over to the district attorney.
War Department.
Yes. Well, I have here the director of the selective service. I suppose a 90 number of people would compete for the privilege of trying Achilles. That, however, does not give us 3 correct out of 4 and does send $25 to Mrs. Moore plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. All right, how about this one from Congressman John M. Coffey, who represents the state of Washington, now at Washington, D.C. Name 3 former governors or high commissioners of the Philippines who have been appointed by Franklin D. Roosevelt to important posts in the federal service. Mr. Pearson.
Secretary of War Stimson.
Yes, that's correct.
Frank Murphy.
That's correct.
Paul McNutt.
That's 3. That's very good. That's all you have to answer. That's good going, Mr. Pearson. Are there any others?
Yeah. I was going to say Murphy.
That would have been correct.
How about Roosevelt, who works over at Doubleday Doran?
He's not now there. He has a good job, too. I mean,
he's down in Puerto Rico.
He's a general in the Army.
How about MacArthur?
I beg your pardon?
General MacArthur, who's now back at the Philippines.
Mr. Pearson? How about that?
MacArthur was never governor of the Philippines.
No,
Homer Cummings was appointed governor of the Philippines and then made attorney general. He never actually served.
Very good. Well, that gives us about the only information we can stand, I guess, about the commissioners. How about this one from Mrs. Forrest Cumming of Athens, Georgia? You get 2 out of 3. Who were these characters of poetry, and where were they going? In the suit of shabby gray, his cricket cap was on his head. Mr. Kieran.
He was going to his death.
Who was that?
The prisoner in the Ballad of Reading Jail by Oscar Wilde.
Absolutely right, Mr. Kieran. The fate of a nation was riding that night. Mr. Adams.
Paul Revere.
Yes, where was he going?
He was going to from Lexington to Boston.
Through every Middlesex village.
Through
in
every
town.
Middlesex village, yes. And farm, but he was going to Boston.
Correct. Now, how about this?
Ah, he's going back.
His father's sword he has girded on. Mr. Kieran.
The minstrel boy.
And where was he going?
Going to war.
Going to the war. That's right. That gives us 3 out of 3. And now Mr. Cross prepares to garner some fresh laurels for frankness and unconventionality.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I merely want to tell you what a friend of mine said the other day. Cross, he began, and his eyes held quite a twinkle, I understand from your recent broadcasts that Lucky Strike is in the tobacco business, not the advertising business. So may I ask what happens to you? I smiled and replied, well, nothing, I hope. Lucky Strike is going to keep right on bringing the facts about tobacco to American smokers. We just want to make clear that advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Lucky's. You see, ladies and gentlemen, even if we did no advertising of any kind, the price you pay for a package of Lucky's would not be reduced one iota. For the total cost of all Lucky Strike advertising, every word you hear on the air, every line you read in print, is such a small fraction of a cent per package that even if it were entirely eliminated, the saving per package could not be passed on to you. We believe that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the milder, better-tasting tobacco for Lucky's. For instance, 21% more than the market average at Mount Pleasant, Tennessee last season. 32% more at Gallatin, Tennessee, and so on all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Why not make your next package, Lucky's, and prove to yourself that better tobacco makes a better cigarette?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $50 and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica, one of which will now remain in Washington, D.C. Lucky Strike thanks those Washington twins, Mr. Pearson and Mr. Allen, for collaborating with us this evening. Next week, Mr. Franklin P. Adams and Mr. John Kieran will be on hand, and as our guests of honor, we'll have first our old friend, the critic, composer, and author, Deems Taylor, and second, a lady most distinguished in the theater and in the world of literature, whose bestseller, Saratoga Trunk, has captured the enthusiasm of the reading world today, Miss Edna Ferber. Now remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous...